Almighty and everlasting Father, again as we assemble to worship you in spirit and truth, thankful for the assurance of thy abiding presence, the realization that we are thy children, saying, Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Made known by thy word and by the guidance of thy spirit, that thy plains of spirit in the heavens of thy household surround us. The physical world in which we are embodied, that we are real and this is tangible, so also are thy purposes. Thankful, our Father, that a kingdom that exists spirit, soul, and body possesses all the attributes of survival and all the facets of thy creation. There is no power of darkness or force of evil that can destroy it. There is nothing that can keep these things from coming to pass which you have ordained. We pray as we meditate upon the situations that surround us and the conditions in our environment, that we shall recognize also the essentialness of the strength which you have given unto thy people, that we might draw upon it, that we might become aware of its potential, and in this hour as we commit ourselves to thy hand, that we might become ever increasingly aware of all that is related unto us and to us from thy purpose. We might know that which you have purposed for us from the beginning, and that which you intend to reveal in us by thy purpose. So, our Father, as we commit ourselves to thy hand, we pray for the spiritual center of thy kingdom, thy church, a great living, vital institution that shall never be destroyed, shall never be wiped out or crushed, for the nations of thy kingdom which shall endure, and for that kingdom of thy household that shall not be taken from the ark, and looking forward unto that victory that belongs unto us, because thou art our Father, and hast promised us to these thy children. So we say, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, and thine we ask. Turn this afternoon to talk to you about the abiding presence. I think that it is most important for all of us to understand the great mysteries of the kingdom. There's no facet of knowledge and truth that you can afford to overlook. There's nothing quite as significant for you to understand this afternoon than that you are never alone. This past week has been a rather interesting week. We mentioned some of its detail on our Friday night tape. We were in San Francisco, and while in San Francisco, we had a chance to see just how far and how fast the areas of deterioration take place. The areas around Benesse's International Settlement and where these restaurants are, they are gradually becoming so twisted and so perverted and so overfilled with evil. And so much race mixing, mongrelization, immorality, and depravity is showing up there that is becoming out of bounds for those under 21 years old, even in this restaurant area. I think there's some 19 bookstores in this area, and these bookstores have now their windows filled with, and inside their shops, pictures of all kinds of mongrelization, perversion, so lewd and so obscene that now the police department has forced them to post signs up there that children, or those under 21, are not admitted. The evil and the conditions that are taking place make the Barbary Coast look like a Sunday school session as compared with the evil that is being practiced and which they're attempting to spread in this area now. When we see this situation, we can think again, as it was in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah, so should it be in the end of this age. And it's just exactly what is transpiring. Over in Marin County, which happens to be across the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco, is one of the most beautiful spots for people to reside in any close proximity to San Francisco. Redwood trees and tall fern glens make lovely spots for homes, but I'm going to tell you something. There are more communists residing in Marin County than any area in the Pacific coast. In fact, almost all of the pseudo-intellectuals and almost all of the false commie professors that exist in the San Francisco Bay Area live in that area. Vast numbers of teachers in high schools and in junior colleges that are liberal and wingy live in this area, too. It was in this very area that we covered the Methodist Federation of Social Action for the Inter-American Activities Committee 7 years ago, when this was a virtual communist outlet for propaganda, and when they were directing the churches that were a part of this peculiar communist wing conference how to carry on a revolution and how to defeat even an antagonistic approach to the anti-communist program. Thus it was, if we became involved in war with Red China, is it fast escalating now? Why the young people of the Epirus League were to be taught how to sabotage shipments and how to participate in blocking and hurting a war effort. at that time, why, one of those speakers that was helping to tell them how they could oppose the war efforts of anti-communism as though this was a terrible anti-liberalism program was none other than Overa Overstreet. She and Harry Overstreet wrote the book, What You Should Know About Communism. Strange enough that this book, which became a textbook, and FBI talked about it, Hoover said it's a great book, and the president said, I'm reading this book, and one day I was talking to Internal Security, so there's a new anti-communist book out by the Overstreet. I said, well, it wouldn't make very much difference. I said, if they wrote an anti-communist book when they were up counseling the Methodist clergy and others on how to oppose an anti-communist war and how to sabotage your own nation's military efforts. I also read the book, and I found out that they were apologizing for America and praising the supposed fine points in the revolution all through the text. I pointed out to chiefs of internal security, and they had read right past all this and never caught the point. What they were doing was making depressing attitudes the result of the readers reading the book. And when he got through, they kept saying, you can't fight communism unless you come up with something better. And then they tried to tell us how much better communism was. This type of left-wing liberal philosophy spread through the country was very subtly being taught these clergy in Marin Valley at that time. And a lot of local resident communists were attending this particular conference that day. And they had so many liberal preachers coming to the conference that they didn't know who was or wasn't one. And it was easy to slip in and register and take down the notes. And in this conference, they were told how to sabotage shipments at the various ports and on the docks and at the factories. And they wanted all the anti-communist young people sent off to war and all the liberals kept home. They told the preachers how to set up a special Bible training program inside their own church and home and how to take all of the young liberals and communists and enroll them as Bible students to exempt them from the draft and keep them home. So we covered this conference at that time and knew that some of these communists were resident there, quite a great number of them. Well, this past week while we were in San Francisco, we were to discover that communists have been, again, using this as a springboard for some of their propaganda in the area. Two Vietnamese agents, which come from the North Vietcong, who are communists, brought films, propaganda films made in China in Chinese language. They show the American forces under the American flag persecuting and executing civilians and using napalm bombs and blasting them and blowing up towns and communities and doing all kinds of so-called atrocity. And in the Chinese, the Vietcong language, is the attack on America, the brutality, the viciousness, the most awful thing that's ever happened and so forth. And so it is ad-libbed in English as it goes along with microphone and magnaphone by the two commie spies in the United States. They went to a high school whose principal happened to be Cather of Tamalpais High, and they were able to get these films in the classrooms and assemblies and into that high school. And their winning teachers went along with this thing, and they showed these films. And when it was over, the student body was violently anti-United States, pro-communist, and praising the Vietcong. And people that were patriots and Christian young people that were in that high school that said this is propaganda and we're against communism and we're not going to oppose our government on this were almost unsafe on the school ground. And they were shooed and they were sneered at in their classes. Some of these students we happen to know, one of them especially, a 70-year-old girl whose family has been in our congregations and who has been in anti-communist causes ever since she was a little girl. She heard the news before. She took down the name. She got the film. She got the facts, and the facts are going to the committee. If they want something to investigate, here's a couple of agents and spies circulating through the colleges and the high schools. At the same time, stimulating this was an activity for the junior colleges in this area, with these two Vietnamese spies assisting it, to get up a student body march as they had last week in Washington in front of the White House. This is an unusual first. Remember that 20,000 students picketed the White House in an anti-war picket line, picketing against the war in the Vietnam against the Vietcong. Now, someone said, hit these students? Why this great bleeding heart pacifism movement? This movement is communist organized and designed, and it is is one of the strangest propaganda programs of all. No one would have thought that you'd get more than 300 or 400, maybe 1,000 at the most, in a kind of a student protest like this. The facts show that over 30% of those 20,000 praying marching students came from the state of California. 20,000 of them, 30% came from California. Was also demonstrated that we have one of the most unprecedented and strange things here in California throughout the nation. It's expanding. We have unregistered students that are down here on UCLA campus and throughout the universities of our state, about some 30 to 40, 35%, the paper says, in some places 40% of the students on the campus are not registered students at all. They don't belong to the student body. They do not attend any classes they don't like. They just listen to lectures they like they were visitors. But they classify themselves as non-registered students. They're not interested in marks. They're not interested in eventual diplomas. They're not interested in graduation. They say that this is all a discriminatory policy, that kind of education, that they want a classless society. They don't want one above the other. They don't believe in being marked or credited or getting marks. They just want to hear and learn what they want. Of course, generally, there's only two things. They attend drama, and they are interested in art, they cite, and basically, they're interested in political and social science. Most of the time, they spend in all the forums and all the areas of argument and participation in all the beatnik, left-wing, and liberal programs. And then when they have a proposition like this, they are among those that are rushed here and there to the marches or form the picket lines downtown the city of Los Angeles. You're told the students of the universities are in opposition. Well, they may get a few that are registered students, but a large number of them fall into this category. Investigation showed this past week that out of an area of political revolution, out of industrial, left-wing, anti-Christian forces, the money was raised. A lot of students whose parents were approached, whose names were picked up in the East at this march, their parents were asked, did you supply the money for your student's son to go back to this march? And they discovered that a great number of them said, well, our sons are not enrolled, our children are not enrolled in the college, but they have their allowance, and they audit what they want, and this is kind of a formative period for them, and they're disturbed, and so we have supplied them with an allowance, but we didn't supply them with this money. And we find that a vast kitty was in circulation, communist red inspired here in the state of California, by anti-Christian Jewish pocketbooks of industrial forces against our society that financed sending those students back there. Now, if you don't think this is organized, there was over 20,000 of them up and down in front of the White House. I didn't hear any complaints about this army, except that they did make them peek back eventually off the steps where they were in the way. But I just point this out to show you how far reaching this goes. This communist influence and this design of moving into our schools and classes and showing phony communist-produced motion pictures to try to brainwash and set our own young people against our nation is something that must stop, and every intelligent Christian better wake up to this kind of thing and say we've had enough. While we are on this, because before we go into the other facets of our subject, just remember this. Communism is still on the move and still plans on trying to overthrow your government. Last night on the Joe Pine Show, and some of you may have been watching that show because Reverend Connie Lynch was on that show last night, and he was making a good account of himself, though this is not a show where they treat a minister with respect. They invite him on, and then they continue interrupting so he doesn't have a chance to express himself, and then they pull out of the dregs a lot of scum to attack him, and in this instance, why they do everything to put a man at bad light. But he held his ground, and on this same show, where he was appearing and where he took his stand in support of segregation and as a biblical factor, on this very program, they had a communist, a bearded communist who wasn't, he wasn't unkempt, he was well-dressed and nicely appeared, and he was sharp and smart, and don't misunderstand him, he was a communist, and he was on the other side, but he knew his position. Now, they were also equally cutting him up, which was, of course, never disturbs anybody as long as it's the enemy. But the fact remains that in the course of this, they asked him, just what is the Communist Party plan? He says, we not only have a plan, he says, we're getting along with it, we're advancing with it. He says, it's not very far from fruition. We're going to overthrow the United States. And so Joe Pine said, do you mean with force and violence? He says, with force and violence. We're going to liquidate the capitalistic class. We're going to take over. We're going to overthrow the United States with force and violence. And before he thought about it, Pine said, well, you just justified that the Minutemen and these private armies. Because this is what the right wing knows the communists plan to do when they think the time's ripe, and if they're preparing to defend themselves from something that's not enough law enforcement to protect them from, then that is justified when the Communist Party says, this is what we intend to do. Under the same stress, we point this out to you. When we were in San Francisco a month ago, and we had several members of this congregation with us, by the way, at that time. One businessman whose home we were in told us about a businessman associate of his that we had met. He said this man was killed the last week, and he went to the corner store to get a newspaper by a group of Negro cops to beat his brains out and kill him on the sidewalk. He said, I went to his funeral. Now, in the San Francisco area, though our auditorium is filled and people represent a lot of organizations and movements that come for this monthly media briefing, the fact remains that it's still an awfully small segment of the community. We were told in San Francisco last month, and I have members of this congregation witnessed it, of 11 different people killed and beaten to death and robbed and all of them ending in death in San Francisco in that previous, from the time we'd been there the previous month. 11 people killed, mugged, robbed, in the processes and even raped by Negroes in the city of San Francisco. And if the congregation, the smallest segment of San Francisco, as I know of 11 cases in 1 month, then tell me how far down the line towards the beast system is that city being taken? What America needs is communication. The people across the country do not know what's going on in one part of the country or the other because it's being held back by friends by control of press, radio, and television, while always the white man is being put in a adverse situation in appearance before the nation, and all the time what's going on here is a violent, rape, beast situation unprecedented in American history. So we point this out to you. That's one reason why they don't like tape, because tape crosses the line. It reaches every nation. It reaches all the portions of these United States, and it's crossing every denomination and every movement, and is reaching with truth. We're getting calls from editors of newspapers that finally realize this, and they get a story you want because they can't get it in our papers out here when they put it in the news services. But they know that if we have the facts, we have the evidence, and we weave it into the message, that it gets all over the nation and fast. So this is just one of those situations, and it was on Tuesday while we sat at dinner that they had just a few minutes before found the body of a 14-year-old girl that had been stabbed, murdered, and raped by Negroes in Mill Valley. So this is just a little bit of what's going on in that area. Also, you may have read in the newspapers at the same time, a carload of Negroes came on a drive-in restaurant right next to the Balboa High School and started shooting at students and killed one boy, injured another. The Negro car drove away, was apprehended by the police, but they were just mentally disturbed. The race problem suddenly stirred up. But my friends, there's a great difference between the way it stirs up white men, the way it stirs up Negroes. We don't have a violent murder program going on throughout the country, and we don't have a beast operation. I tell you that we're in a situation where the testing time is very, very close. And America is going to explode one of these days, one of these circumstances and situations. Now, at the same time, continual harassment and threats and world pictures everywhere showing that we're in a very turbulent city. We're in a time of chastisement. We're in a time of judgment. Floods, tornadoes, earthquakes, all of the forces of nature seem to be turned loose. And this, my friends, sometimes is where judgment begins, in the house of God. And chastisement will come upon a people until they wake up and call upon God and take a stand for the things that are right. And chastisement sometimes is what it takes to wake people up. They have their attention, their whole, they have their desires and their energies all around the things they have required for themselves and their family. And it's all right. God's blessing rests upon a people that serve him, and it rests upon thrift and diligence and all the areas of productivity. But he does not want you to evaluate the responsibility you have in serving him upon whether or not it involves the security of your property. We have too many people afraid to take a stand for the thing that's right because they're afraid it's going to cost them too much. It's going to hurt their property, or it's going to bring down the ire of officialdom. And when they do this, when they take this position, the thing that transpires becomes quite obvious. All of a sudden, whole areas of insecurity suddenly show up, and people realize that they don't have any real security when they're touching temporal property unless they have the security of coordination and protection from the Most High. I'm going to tell you that what we're watching and what we're going to see is going to bring a nation to an area of understanding and responsibility that the most important thing they possess is their identity, their culture, the obedience to the laws of God, and the establishment of the thing which He's ordained. God doesn't take anything away from a people. He permits, but he lets judgment sometimes do this thing when they put this thing before the basic objective of living. Now, we point out to you, therefore, that there are certain things for us to know. As the continual threats and harassments rise, as people see the situation, I read one letter where a man said, well, it's just all over. He says, we can't win. He says, the Jews control churches and they control the areas of propaganda influence. We can't win. He says, there's nothing we can do. It's already too late. He says, the situations are sweeping in upon us. And he says, all we can do is just do our little bit. But he says, we no sense in getting involved. Let's not make a multitude of enemies and nothing else. So let me tell you something. It's going to increase and wax worse until we win. So is this, Dr. Smith, what do you think? I think that we ought to remember what John Paul Jones said when the ship was sinking, burning underneath him. He says, strike the flag, we've just begun to fight. When we get through, we'll climb on top of what they have. And he did it. It worked. You've been a minority in the earth since the day you arrived. In fact, you were one man's family, and now you're 1/6 of the world's population. And I can assure you by the very words of the prophet Isaiah, of the increase of his kingdom, there's going to be no end. There's no question about the fact that it is important for us to realize that we are not alone. A lot of people are evaluating, what can you do about the forces of evil? What can you do about degeneration, depravity, all these statuses? In fact, again, we tell you to read Dan Smoot's report for the last week, because he comes out to tell about the thing we spoke of when we referred to all the conferences of those churches, Episcopal, Presbyterian, Methodist, and so forth, that had the homosexual conferences and invited them into their churches and said, we've got to experiment with these fine, sensitive people. And the police department didn't want this depravity loose on their young people and in their churches. They didn't want the trouble that was now brewing in the city. They said, if the churches give a sense to this, we'll go into the greatest period of moral degeneration in our history. And it's a rather interesting thing that I happen to have a report now. Eventually, we've had all kinds of reports from the papers. We were there to observe what was going on in the city at this time, and we found a great battle going on with the churches upholding degeneration and depravity and turning on truth. In fact, we found the Glide Memorial Methodist Church and Bishop Pike's operation were about the headquarters of this degeneration. And the Reverend Cecil Williams of the Glide Memorial Methodist Church was one of the spokesman sponsors and also youth ministers in that area. So this minister told the police department, when the police department came and they wanted to stop this to save the morality of the city, and they noticed that several of these men had wedding rings on, they asked these ministers, how do your wives go along with this homosexual experimentation under the guise of the church? And they didn't think it was their business what their wives thought about it. So they said, well, we in the police department still believe in the Ten Commandments and in the laws of morality. Where do you stand on this? And the Methodist Church's minister told the police department that your theological concepts are a lot of jargon and your beliefs are outdated. We don't believe in the Ten Commandments anymore. That's an outdated theological jargon. I don't believe in the Methodist Church anymore either, I can tell you that. But any institution that would keep ministers like this to the pulpit should be ashamed of themselves. This is Mystery Babylon the Great and the Mother of Harlots in the Book of Revelation. Lots of good Methodist ministers, but they have no time to be still now. Now's the time to speak out against the evil. This now becomes a national record, as Dan Smoot tells the whole country, just where these preachers stand. No wonder, then, that you're in times of trouble. But this doesn't take over the country. There's 149 million people in these United States that come out of the background of the white race and are Christian. And when we say this, we use this word reservedly. This doesn't mean they understand and know the things that you may know about the kingdom or know the things they should know about their identity. It's important that people know. But there are a lot of things people don't know, and when they don't know, the blind lead the blind, we all fall in the ditch. I happened to be in a store in which a clergyman was giving a bunch of propaganda tear-jerking support for the clergy that went down the march in Alabama. One of the unique things about this, as this man spake, and he was talking about this march and how wonderful it was, and I just got through reading an article, and Times Magazine has some pieces in it, 6,000 pieces of clerical garb were put on 6,000 phonies that went down there and beatniks to try to represent themselves as clergy, and every piece of clerical garb and every costuming organization and every place where you can rent clothes or any place where they had costumes for several states around was picked up, and these people had the garb of nuns and of sisters and of deaconesses, of priests and of clergy, and there were about 6,000 phony preachers down there, commie beatniks along with the rest. Oh, there were some sad preachers. We had a few sad ones from this city and from others that went down there. They're mixed up, and they don't know what it's all about. They're members of the Communist Party, and they're doing their bidding. But this was all a part of the revolution. But I think it's rather interesting when the character of these brave civil rights marchers turn out to be a bunch of frauds that are not clergymen at all. So this, again, is just another mark of the measure. But at the same time, do not for one moment think the pressure is not on. Everybody designed to continue to use this fraudulent type of propaganda and to move on churches and those that take their stand is on. So this clergyman was speaking. And he was talking about the fact that it was most important that we understand right now that we must have peace and that we must go along with a great new project for peace and for developing the world. Wonderful position our government was taking, and he had a soapbox, he had some people in the store. He was telling them all about how we're going on for brotherhood, and we're going to end prosperity, and we're going to bring about one great happy family, see, and that this was a wonderful thing, and that he was surely glad that he was a part of it. And I said, you're a minister, are you not? And I'm in the church. And I said, well, you know, I think you're a silly sap. He said, why? I said, because what you're talking about, what you're advocating here is not biblical. I said, God's made a very firm and sound foundation for society. He created the earth and he created the people that are in it. And he ordained that kind beget like kind, and he's ordained that the programs of righteousness revolve around truth, which is the foundation of his word. His word is truth, and upon this all things come into focus as men think or use semantics. So by this process, a world already seduced by Lucifer, already in catastrophes and trouble, and he sends his own household, his own race in the world, gives them instruction. And I said, you talk about brutality, and you talk about the terrible things that are being done. Let me tell you something. If people have stopped the mixing of races or tried to stop this, they have been upholding the laws of God. God said, I have placed you above all the people on the face of the earth. You're a holy seed. You're mine. I put you above all the people. He said, that was a cruel Old Testament God. He says, you know, he says, we of the educated clergy today no longer follow a cruel Old Testament God. He says, God's become a Christian. We follow Jesus. Well, I said, you probably don't agree then with the God that gave the law. Let me tell you something. Jesus said, I said this, I gave you the law. I said, before Abraham was, Jesus said, I am. Now you go along with Jesus. And I said, Jesus said, my people are not of the world. Don't take them out of the peace of minute. But even as I'm not of the world, they're not of the world. The children of the kingdom were identified by Christ as different from the others. He separates the people with segregation as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He tears the white race and the sheep of his pasture and the Christians to take over the world and rule it. He promises to deliver it in their hands in his return. And then we brought out again, he said, it's not meet to give the children's bread to the dogs. This wasn't cruel. This was a statement of fact because it could have come to the lost 2,000 of Israel. And this was a negress. Now, what do you think about this? Now, he said, just a moment. We must recognize that Jesus Christ was never went to a theological seminary. He never was educated. He was raised right there in Palestine. And, of course, all the old prejudices of his religion were in his mind. He'd been taught and raised this way. But the great loving heart of Jesus was demonstrated in all of his kindness to people. But don't blame him for everything he says, because you've got to consider his background. I says, you're now a sillier sap than ever. By now we've got a good congregation around. Never start a battle in a grocery store. And this, I said, who do you think Jesus was? You think he was just some man that came along? Well, he wasn't a man, a good man, doing the best he could and with a great fervor to help men. I think then I says, I assume that you do not believe that Jesus is the Christ, the embodiment of the living God. And I said, if you don't understand that, you don't even belong in the pulpit. Don't talk to me about educated clergy. How ignorant can you be if you don't know who God is? So under the discussion moves real fast. I said, we don't have to apologize for what Jesus said, because the old God you don't like in the Old Testament and Jesus, the embodiment that you just call a man in the New Testament, are one and the same. And I said, there isn't any difference in his instructions in the New Testament than there were in the Old Testament. He just was pouring out grace upon a people, but he did not stop the purposes of the building of his kingdom. So in a few minutes' time, the man had uncloaked himself. You know what? He lost almost all his audience the moment he had just said Jesus didn't know. You know, you may have a lot of people around you that are brainwashed, they're liberal, they've been sold a bill of goods, but when you start attacking what Jesus knew, or his person, or who he was, there's a lot of people raised from their mother's knee that make up the great majority and bulk of our nation that know on the inside, just automatically, who Jesus is, and they're not going to let somebody just pass him off as another man. You want to know why we're in trouble? Because this man was the kind of sap he is. He said, why? He said, the trouble is you've been out of seminary probably 30, 35 years. He said, I've been out of seminary about 14, 15 years. And he says, we've learned a lot of things in the last 15 years, last 18 years, about theology. I said, there isn't anything you've learned about theology that God hasn't already shown his ministers and doesn't continue to show it. But I'm going to tell you something. If you don't know who God is, the blind lead the blind, you all fall in the ditch. You know, rather a shocking thing in the course of 30 years of ministry or so, to suddenly find you're outmoded and outdated. That all the things you learned are supposed to no longer be acceptable to the modern clergy. Well, let me tell you something, the revelation of God expands and unveils, and I've learned more in the last 5 years than I learned all my life. One thing I have learned beyond any shadow of a doubt, there's only one great vital thing that men must know. They must know the truth. They must know the things that are in the mind of God. They must know the way he put his universe together and how he's applied and adapted them by the same capacities to carry out in the earth the purposes he had for them. This is, again, the secret. We're not alone. We've never been alone. We were the children of his spirit. The Apostle Paul said we didn't receive the spirit of the world, we received the spirit which is out of God. Because we don't have the spirit of the world order, but we have the spirit which is of God, therefore everything which is of God is shown unto the children of God that want to know it. This is why he says, seek and ye shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you. There isn't any doubt that a lot of people have never learned anything from God because they never sought for anything, because they never thought very much. Because of this, therefore, they think they know it all because they never thought very much about anything, and they don't know very much at all because they never sought after truth. On the basis of this, then, I want to point out to you that Jesus made this statement. He said, if ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, you shall ask what you will, and it shall be done unto you. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you. This means a conscious realization of who God is, of his power, of his authority, of his limitless energy, and his absolute wisdom and knowledge. If you abide in this, the sinking of your consciousness, and the words which he spake dwell in the inner consciousness of your remembrance and are stored up inside of your brain waves, well, let me tell you something. You can ask what you will. You know, there are some passages that are of great significance. And back here when Moses was stirring the people and telling them the things they should know, and Joshua was called now to lead the children of Israel into the land that the Canaanites had taken ages before from the race. And as he was about to go, Moses said, "And Yahweh, he it is that goes before thee, he will be with thee, he shall not fail thee, neither shall he ever forsake thee, fear not, neither be dismayed." He goes before thee, he will never leave thee, he will never forsake thee. He is a continually abiding presence. And before they came to the hour of conflict, suddenly in front of the man Joshua appeared the embodiment, revelation of God. And when he stood there with his armor and with his strength and his shield and his glory, and Joshua said, "Who are you?" He said, "Just who are you? Are you a friend or an enemy? Because I don't need any more enemies," he said. And he heard someone say, "I'm the captain of the Lord's host." I guess all of us can say today, we don't need any more enemies. We're looking for people to stand. They said, "I'm the captain of the Lord's host." About that time, the glory broke out on this one. Joshua fell down and knew it was the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that was going to lead his host. And by the way, he had a sword in his hand. Mr. Winch would be interested in that if you were here today, because you have to look out for armed clergy or armed preachers or maybe an armed God. You know, an armed God is a new thing for some people. In the instance of this, the situation now expands a little bit. The presence of God was with Joshua. The instructions were right. The victory was won. I think of the Apostle Paul going through all the harassment which he went through in the book of Acts. And if you want to read the real story of anti-Christian Jewish persecution of Christians, read the book of Acts. The book of Acts tells you what transpired and what happened. And as you go through its record, you'll see the persecution and the constant attempt. And so upon this one instance, the Sanhedrin had been working to destroy the Apostle Paul. And you read in the 23rd chapter of the book of Acts that describes that, and these others arose, and they were out to try to destroy Paul. And there was a great dissension because there were a few good people that had heard Paul that were trying to defend him. And the chief captains, they wanted to save Paul from being pulled to pieces, and they commanded the soldiers to go down and take him by force so as they could bring him to the castle to protect him from these Jews and these theologians who wanted to tear him up. The Apostle Paul was being beset by on every side by the power of the forces of evil against Christianity. And the night following all this problem, when he was in an unknown quandary, where was he going to go? What was going to happen to him? And it said, therefore, and the presence of the Lord suddenly stood by. Now, I've been there all the time, but the Apostle Paul was now to some Sicilian. And all of a sudden, somebody flies by and Paul, "Just be a good cheer. I'm right here with you." Now, they're not going to be able to do what they've got in mind, because I still got a plan, and you're going down to Rome, and you're going to tell them down there in Rome, and no matter what they think they're going to do, they can't do it because you're on the way to Rome. So God and the presence of God suddenly became very real to Paul, because he stood there and told him what he was going to do. You know, in the book of Hebrews, we have these words, which can be one of the most vital patterns of our thinking. It tells us, therefore, "For he has said, I will never leave thee, nor forsake thee. As an abiding presence, I am with you even unto the end of the age." That you can not only count upon it, but its communication with you will be out of the area of the Spirit. We often hear people say, "Not by might nor by power, but by my Spirit, saith the Lord." How does the Spirit work? The Spirit illuminates the intelligence and the consciousness of man and fills him with the dynamic energy and drive and vision to carry out the purposes of God. The Spirit brings action. It never brings complacency, and it never leaves inactivity. It spurs intelligent action. the Spirit of God is conscious realization. It is the adjustment of the consciousness of the child of God with the mind of his Father. After all, you are a celestial being. You are spirit, soul, and body. You are embodied in the physical world by birth in the Adamic race, but you were begotten of incorruptible seed by the Father before the world was framed, and you are spirit of his spirit and life of his life. Therefore, your inner consciousness can tune in on the wavelength of the Father, and the more you know of his word, the more you think in these terms, the more it's a constant functioning operation. So we talk about the abiding presence. There is no question about the fact that the omnipresence of God in the dimension of spiritual consciousness is with you at all times. There are a lot of people that don't know that. They live in a soulishness. They live out of their sense perception of all the things they can touch, taste, and handle, and do not draw on the reservoir of spiritual perception. Though there's always subconsciously working in them something they don't understand. Because God is not going to lose this race or this household. He's not going to lose any part of it because he's God. All Israel shall be saved as it is written. The great spiritual dynamic of God's calling power to call out his sheep, even bring about transmission, is going to take place. But there are a lot of people today who are of your race, who come out of nominal Christian backgrounds, are being used and are being motivated by the powers of darkness. And they're captive. And they're captive to the world order and its approval. And so by this policy, they may have authority. They may be areas of authority. And one of these days, they're not going to have any authority. They're going to be glad to stand by while the first become last and the last become first. They'll be doorkeepers in the house of God. You can be president, be a doorkeeper maybe in a few years. I know there's several of them that have taken a lot of grace even to sign them to the doorkeeper's spot. But know this. He said, I call my sheep by name. And he says, I can bring about a complete adjustment of all their consciousness in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. One great electronic galvanizing of the spirit, and every one of them will think no longer short-circuited by all the powers of darkness. They'll think clearly. Those nascent and electrons of remembrance that move around the nerve tendrils inside of your brain and are the fixation of memory and are inherited even from your forebears in chromatin and leave your cultural patterns besides those of your own experience are one of the most vital reasons why to preserve this area of wisdom and culture and vital and living force. God doesn't want you to mutate your race, mongrelize it, or let any mutation in the background of this people affect even the wavelength of the nerve system or the abilities to remember. It is not a wavelength of hatred by God against the things which he created, or their races, or their species. But it is an order by the Most High God that you shall not mutate that, and you have lost this capacity of perception, and it is the most evil thing that can be done is to break down that which God's established and set in order. This is a transgression that you can't just forgive because you've got mutations, and you can't do anything about the mutations. They're already mutated. This transgression follows the sins of the fathers, the third and fourth generation, and on down. This is the kind of transgression that doesn't leave the mind clear enough to serve in the priesthood or in the temple. And the Most High said, for 10 generations, they can't even come into the temple, let alone assume leadership. I can well understand why some preachers preach like they do, because we've got too many mongrels in the pulpit now. Under the instance of this, then, let me point this out to you, an abiding presence. And into the consciousness of his people go the influence of the Spirit. You know, some of the people round about you do more playing while they sleep than they ever did while they were alive. Did you know that? You have people around you that are kind of neutralized. Some of these people have never heard the truth, so they're not responsible for what they haven't heard, but they have inherited more truth than they're hearing. And the Spirit prays for what they have need of while they sleep. That's the only sustaining good they've got is this thing which is their inheritance. And therefore, they vibrate together with you, but they don't know why, waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God, but the Spirit is vibrating in them while they sleep the things they have need of. I'm going to point out to you that under the purposes of the Most High, that there isn't anything that is important for us to remember as the pattern of the abiding presence. This is the abiding presence of Yahweh, who says, I am Yahweh, beside me there is no God. He says before, in the ancient times, before things come to pass, I declare it by my counsel. And he said, it'll come to pass, and I'm going to do all my pleasure. And I also stand by you, I'm there. Now, the fact that one of the great mysteries the Apostle Paul talks about is over here in Colossians. It's one of the mysteries of the kingdom. And it says, therefore, even the mystery which has been hid from the ages, I am a minister according to this dispensation of God, so that it has been given unto me to fulfill the word of God, Paul said. Even the mystery which has been hidden from the ages and from generation is now going to be made manifest in his breathing offspring. Now listen. To whom God made known what is this riches of this glory of this mystery among the nations. It is spiritual seed of the Most High God. Right down here, a person with a character, with a personality, and the Father said, you are a Christed individual. You are the spiritual offspring of the Most High down here in the flesh, and therefore, as the only way this can function is when the consciousness of this man and the wisdom and the mind of God are synchronized, and this is when Christ is revealed in you. Now therefore we have this hope, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. There is no power, no light, apart from this abiding presence. And synchronized with you is the vitality of the life of God's Spirit, capable of carrying God's thoughts to your consciousness. You know, if we could see inside the mechanism of the brain and see things which we today must characterize as energies and formula, if we could see them in diagram, you'd see that all throughout the nerve filaments of your brain are recorded areas of energy, and you discover coming in waves of energy are things coming in all the time. And each according to its area and to its pattern. If you were to make it in a chart, you were to place these electrons like tiny dashes and dots and balls and diagrams, you discover that the Most High sends down upon his household knowledge and wisdom, and it moves into this inner container that you and I call the head. And when it gets in there, it starts to form, and it's in areas where the individual seeking it or looking for it will find that he has a constant area of power and advice. But I'll tell you what else it does. Those that have become aware that they are the children of God, as the Apostle Paul said, his spirit bears witness with our spirit that we are the offspring of God, that know who they are, where they come from, discover as they seek that as they become filled with the Word of God, if ye abide in me, how do you abide in him? Someone says that there's some way that Christ has to come along and climb on the inside. Let me tell you how Christ gets inside. He said, lo, I stand at the door knocking. Any man opens up the door, I come in. He comes in through the consciousness, through his word, out of the essence of his mind. You open the door to receive the things in the mind of God, and he is inside with you in your consciousness. And when you dine with him, you are dining on truth. You're not eating food, my friends, that you set on the table, but you are taking something more vital to your survival than even that food. Now therefore, we have these words, if ye abide in me, and what my words abide in you, ye shall ask what you will, and it shall be done unto you. There is a dirty question about the fact that there is something already built up in you that are the children of the kingdom, especially among those that know this gospel of the kingdom, and this will increase, and people are being set free all over the nation to know truth. I'll tell you one thing that's happening, that as you start to think as God thinks, and you start to think in terms of his word, there may be some silly clergy that say that's an old-fashioned, hard God, or they may not want to agree with Jesus Christ, but you've already agreed with him. And you have agreed that you're going to be in agreement with him because he's God. You may fail, you may make mistakes, but you know that he's right. Now what happens? Well, you all of a sudden you discover that you not only have to have the stored up knowledge of your own experiences, you've got the stored up knowledge of the Father. You've got the facts of creation. You've got the history of a race. You've got an unlimited reservoir to draw on. And you know what you can do? You have become a living computer system. And you can pour any facts in there and digest it when it comes out. What you receive out of this is fact. Why? Because it has been based first. And the material that has been poured in and has been electronically stored there are the things that God has said. You don't have to qualify what God said. You can put it down unreservedly. If the things that he says you don't understand now, you just file it in there. When you get the whole picture, you're going to get it right. Now, there are things they said God said. There are things that ecclesiastical leaders tried to twist and reinterpret in order to support some little doctrine they had in their denomination. They don't stand up. But the words that come out of the mouth of God, the words that relate to how He made His universe and how His laws stand for its preservation, or to a special spiritual society which were His sons and daughters, they stand. Now let me point this out to you. You start to think as you move through the processes of a day. You pick up the newspaper and you see a newspaper. You know something's working all the time. Everything you're feeding through your eyes, back of your brain, are going through this computer system and being evaluated. It doesn't make any difference what they said in the press. Before you get to the end of it, you've got an entire different picture here because the Spirit told you what was truth and what was error. They can say that all the patriots are planning on overthrowing the government by force. They have secret armies. And you know automatically the Antichrist is trying to stop Christians from being able to defend themselves. Nobody had to tell you that. You didn't read that in the paper. You knew it all at once. You knew the moment you see the design to try to stop resistance to communism and to appeasement. Automatically when you see that, you don't even have to stop to read that article. You know that they're trying to disarm you. You know that they're trying to take you over and then absorb you and dissolve these United States. You know that when you listen to what's going on at the United Nations, they come out with a row of flowery speeches about the welfare of the world, and by the time you've got to the bottom of it, you know that this is a new plot just developed, how they're going to try to destroy America. You didn't have to sit down and work this out. Why? Because you have been storing facts, and these facts are stored, and the Word of God is crystallizing it, and the abiding presence is giving you the proper outlook. Someone said, don't you think that the elect will be deceived? No, my friends, the elect that have been abiding with Him are never deceived. These fellows that think they're deceiving us are mighty well fooled. You know, a lot of times they think that we're giving respect to their areas of error, or that we are trying to acquiesce, or we're trying to gain favor with them if at times we are silent. But let me tell you something. The children of God, with the abiding presence and aware of this, are never deceived. They not only have the knowledge of truth, but the Spirit, which knows every deep thing in the mind of God, makes it known unto you. So I point out to you that there is nothing for you to become as aware of, as to realize that as a child of God, of the household of God, of the race of His purpose, and the nations of His kingdom, that you have one standing by your side, always standing tall, who said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. And out of His mind, as though it were radio waves coming into a receiver, the electronic discharge of the consciousness of the Almighty, there is flowing into your mind when you need it, the thing you need to say, the thing you need to understand, and an assurance that there is no area that He would leave you uninformed in. And in all these processes, He says that this Spirit will bring in synchronization, spirit, soul, and body, until the eye of thy insight be single. So we are living in an hour when the great treasure of God's kingdom is His abiding presence with those that are His children. Unlimited power, because you can do anything you know how to do, and anything that needs to be done, if you're synchronized with Him, He'll give you the co-creative power to bring it to pass. Not always sometimes when you want it, but when it's needed to be done and when it's right. I point out to you that these words, to whom God would make known this riches of His glory among the nations, which is this divine quality, this Christed Spirit that is in you, the hope of glory. There can be no question about the positiveness of God's kingdom, nor about His word that doesn't change. He said, I will lead you into the knowledge of all truth. I will bring all things to your remembrance, even the things that I declared unto you from the beginning. And so we tell you this, that in the midst of the hour when the enemy's strategies or his harassments or his threats look as though they're going to move with great judgment, just remember that this is the latter day, and we are in God's time, on God's timetable for the awakening of His kingdom. And that because of this, that all the powers of darkness are overlooking the presence of the Most High God. If there's anything that they don't like to think about, it's His presence. Did you know that even in the interrogation concerning government employment, that in areas in the State Department and several other areas in Washington, that one of the questions they asked any individual Do you believe in Jesus Christ? Do you believe that he was virgin born? Do you believe he's going to come back again? And if you answered all those things yes, you're suspect. You're not mentally sound enough for their State Department. Now let me tell you something. This is just the way the Antichrist wants to run the government. This is why we're finding so much trouble. The blind are leading the blind, they all fall in the ditch. There was a time when if a man had answered those three questions right, he'd been eligible for a cabinet post. You know, they can say what they want to, and they can try to smear his character and downgrade his abilities. And they would have made him one of the greatest scoundrels of all time if he hadn't been successful, but George Washington had faith. You know, I note that there's a trend down through the modern time of all the left-wingers and the wingies to tout to downgrade every hero that was great in our history. And now they seem to spend all their side time to try to say something snide about George Washington's thing. Of course, there's one thing, the segregationists can never come out and say, or the integrationists can never come out and say George Washington was an integrationist because they can't make that stick. But he did pray, and he did tell his visions, and he had the courage to declare what God showed him. And there wasn't any doubt, he saw the conflict and told about it, of everything that has transpired from that time to this one. And what he saw and what he perceived, he declared it, but he saw one thing important. He saw that this nation under God had a destiny. And he saw the ultimate victory of white Christian civilization to do the work of God with its light and glory being revealed again at the end of the age, even after conflict in our streets. And he saw the triumphant manifestation of the glory of God standing side by side, saying, Son of the Republic, look and live. I want you to know that, again, fear not, little flock. It's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. You're still a minority in the earth, but we're not a minority out here when we consider the vastness of our Father's universe and all that stands with us. And I want you to know that there is a greater catalyzation of power than those that can't understand what I'm saying this afternoon will ever understand. But if you can catch the picture, what I'm talking about, the energy and power that put together by the sheer essence of its will and held together out of the patterns of its organized energy, the universe, has sends and continues to send out of the wavelength of its spirit energy and power unto you, that at your lips there can go forth a command, and that in the revelation of your faith shall be one of the great hours of new liberation for your society and for your nation. I tell you that by my spirit we'll demonstrate the great constructive and victorious power of God. And that we'll see it political and social and economic. We'll see it in the salvation of the earth. We'll see it in the hosts of God. We'll see it in the defeat of communism and the defeat of every enemy of Jesus Christ. I want to cite to you again then that it is an abiding presence whose image you can understand. It is the face of the eternal Jesus, Yahshua. It's not one Buddha or one of the strange gargoyle gods of Asia, or it's not the witch doctors of Africa. It is the image of the invisible God who became embodied, visible, and he was a member of your race, and so therefore all your race looked like him to this extent. He didn't look like Africa, and he didn't look like Asia. He looked like your race. And you know what he looks like, and you never saw in any home that you've ever been in, you never saw a nigger Jesus, or you never saw a Chinaman Jesus. Not that we're against Chinamen or Negroes, but you never saw one. Because the God that created the heavens and earth was one with you, and you are his embodiment, and he was in the image of his spirit, and you are in the image of his spirit. You're in the image of your spirit. So I make this clear when I say the abiding presence of the Most High is the great power of communication. It's the area where you grow in strength. It's the great delineator. It is the great computer system of absoluteness in which is fed in the Word of God and which comes out a proper understanding of every problem with a guiding instruction on how to perform.